Our wonderful guest speaker, Lisa Coffey, who has a new book. It's based on the Bhagavad Gita, Song of the Divine, but it has commentary. Yes. So it's really neat. Come check it out in the bookstore. In the meantime, here's the wonderful and fabulous Lisa Coffey.
Yay. Okay. Hi, everybody. So in keeping up with Betty Ann's tradition of starting with a joke, it was very hard to come up with one because most of my jokes I stole from Betty Ann, so I had to find one that she didn't know. So it was 4th of July, and a preschool teacher was talking to her class, explaining to them what this means. And she says, "This is the birthday of the United States, the land where we are all free." And a little boy in the front row stood up very indignant and said, "I am not free. I am four." So one of the big spiritual questions in this life is, what do I want? You know, there's three big spiritual questions. Who am I? What do I want? And what is my purpose? So let's talk about what do I want right now, right? Well, Vivekananda, who's the founder of Vedanta, well, he didn't found it, but he brought it to the United States, where he spoke in English all these divine Indian principles so that we could learn them back in the 1890s. He said, "All nature is crying through all the atoms for one thing, its perfect freedom." So what does that mean for us? I mean, don't we have freedom? We have the freedom to vote, to live, to work. You know, we can make up our own decisions. We have freedom of speech. We have a lot of freedom, right? But there's more to it than that. When we're talking about freedom, we're talking about our soul being free. There's a quote in chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita. "What we really want is freedom for everyone that is the same. To be free from all the ties that bind, that keep us tethered to this game." So what they're talking about here is freedom from the karmic cycle, freedom from the cycle of birth and death that keeps us coming back to this life to go through all these problems and suffer and have pain and have problems and have struggles and blah, 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 right? Yeah, there's joy and there's everything in this life too. There's fun, but everything in this life is temporary. So what binds us to this life? Are we really bound to this life? Well, Vedanta says, no, we're not bound to this life. We just think we are. And they illustrate this with a story. In ancient India, there was a washerman. His job was to take the clothes from the houses and put it all on his donkey, ride down the long ride to the river, wash all the clothes, load them back up, take it back to the village, and distribute the clothes. That was his job. That's what he did. And he would do this once a week. And when he went down there, he always tied the donkey up to a tree, because without his donkey, he doesn't have a business. And if the donkey isn't tied up to a tree, he's going to go roaming around and he's going to lose the donkey. So one day he makes the trip all the way down. He unloads the wash and he goes to tie up the donkey, and he realizes he doesn't have the rope. So what's he going to do? There's no way he could get everything loaded up, go back, come back. It would be dark and he would not be able to do his job. So he's trying to figure out, what am I going to do? He's looking around. There's nobody around except this sage meditating under a tree. So he goes to the sage and he says, "Sage, I'm in this bind. And what do I do? I need to tie up my donkey to the tree so that he doesn't run away. And I've got to do the wash and blah. Oh, I just don't know what to do." So he goes, "It's very simple. Just go through the motions of tying him up, you know? make the donkey think that you're tying him up. Go to your basket, pretend like you're pulling out the rope, pretend like you're putting it around his neck, pretend that you're tying it to the tree, go through the motions and see what happens. You'll see. So he did it. He went through the motions. He pulled the rope out. He tied it, the imaginary rope around the donkey's neck. He tied the imaginary rope around the tree. And sure enough, the donkey stayed put. And he was able to do all of his wash, fold it up, load it back in the baskets. He's like, I did it. Wow. Okay. Well, that was cool. Gets back up on the donkey and says, let's go. The donkey will not go. The donkey is like stuck. He's like, come on, donkey, let's go, let's go, let's go. He's not moving. So the guy's like, what in the world is with this animal? So he goes back to the wise man sitting under the tree, and the wise man says, he thinks he's still tied to the tree. So you need to take the imaginary rope off of the tree, take it off of his neck, and put it back in your basket, and then he'll know he's free. So he's like, really? I have to do that? He's like, yeah, you have to do that. So he did it, took the imaginary rope off the tree, off of his neck, put it in the basket, got on the donkey, and sure enough, they went on their way. This is how we are in life. We think we are tied to this world, and we're free. We're really free. We're born free. But there's so much that binds us. There's that imaginary rope that we think we are stuck. We think that this is our life. What is it? What are the ties that bind us? There's two things that bind us: our desires and our aversions. Whatever we want pulls us in that direction. Whatever we don't want pulls us away from that. So those are the two things. What we want is freedom from all this. Freedom. So how do we do that? Well, if you think of it in this way, what pulls us towards our desires? It's our senses. All of the physical things, our eyes, ears, nose, mouth, skin, sound, taste, touch, smell, sight, right? Those are the things that keep us bound. And those are like, in Vedanta, there's an analogy of, there's a chariot, right? And our senses are those horses. The horses are the senses going, oh, we want this. We see that chocolate cake and we smell that beautiful fragrance and we want this and we want that. And they're just like going, right? Our mind is the reins of the horse. And our intelligence is the driver. So the driver is the one holding the reins. So we have to think, where does the mind want to go? What does the mind want to do? And we have to think higher, not just we want to go towards our desires, but wait a second, step back and be that intelligent mind and direct the senses to where they really need to go, not just where they want to go. Where it's good for us to go. Ernest Holmes says, no person whose entire time is spent in the contemplation of limitation can demonstrate freedom from such limitation. Let me say that again. No person whose entire time is spent in the contemplation of limitation can demonstrate freedom from such limitation. And what are we doing? We're spending all our time looking at our limitations, feeling like a bound human being, you know, constraints of this body. I'm getting old. I can't do this. I can't do that. You know, our budget, whatever. Looking at all the things we can't do rather than all the things we can do. So there is a formula for freedom that we can follow. If we follow this formula, we can have freedom. I mean, we have freedom, we're just not experiencing it. So, right, we want to experience it. We want to live it. The formula is this: discernment plus renunciation equals freedom. That's the equation. So let's break it down a little bit. Discernment. What does discernment mean? My Bhagavad Gita class knows this, right? Yes, you guys, you better know this after 18 months of this. Discernment is knowing the difference between what is real and what is not real. What is real is everything that is not changing, that doesn't go away, it's never born, it never dies. It's the true nature of who we are. Everything that is unreal is changing, transitory. You know, our senses can perceive it. And so we need to always discern between the two of these things. Okay, so I was trying to think of an example, and this morning as I'm doing my makeup, I thought of this example for you guys. Getting down to brass tacks here, okay? In Vedanta, the example is the snake and the rope. And you've probably heard this before because it's a very famous example. You walk into a room and you see a snake and you go, the snake, oh my gosh. And your heart starts beating and you're shaking and the fear is there. And it's very real to you because there's a snake. But then you look closer and you're like, oh, it's just a rope. And then you start calming down, right? But you thought it was a snake, and so your body and your mind reacted as if it were a snake. It was real in that moment, but you look closer, and it's not real. It's a rope. Okay, how does this apply in our daily lives? This is where my makeup mirror came in, okay? I'm doing my makeup, and then part of my doing my makeup these days is I have to, like, cover my roots. I complain about my roots all the time, okay? I have gray hair. Believe it or not, what is the real hair here, right? It looks brown, but that's the unreal because I color my hair. The true nature of this hair is gray. It appears brown, but it's really gray. The true nature of the hair is gray, okay? So this is how life is for us. What is the true nature and what does nature appear to be? But, okay, I know the true nature of my hair, just like you may know the true nature of yourself, that you are free. But I choose to color my hair anyway, right? I'm not ready to let that go. St. Augustine once said, and St. Augustine's a great Catholic saint. He once said, "Dear God, please give me wisdom. Please give me freedom. Please give me purity and truth. Please give me freedom from my desires. But not today." This is us, right? This is us. I'm not ready to stop coloring my gray hair. And at some point, I guess we're not really ready to be totally free because we're not. We're too tied to looking on Facebook. This was a horrendous week, and I couldn't help but watching the TV and getting caught up in all that drama. Is any of it real? No, because if that wasn't going on, something else would be going on. Before that happened, something else was going on. After this happens and is resolved, something else will be going on. It's all this drama that never ends. It's like this soap opera. I used to watch soap operas. I quit recently. I'm like so proud of myself that I quit watching the soap operas because it's ridiculous. It's like that, you know, that song that they sing in school. This is the song that never ends. It goes on and on, my friend. What makes it end? You stop singing. That's the only thing that makes it stop. Otherwise, it goes on and on and on and on and on and on, right? Life is a soap opera. So anyhow, Ryan, can you hand me that blue book on top? So this made me think of Jonathan Livingston Seagull. This is where the free as a bird comes in, right? This book is so meaningful to me. It was one of the first spiritual books I read. Back in 1979 is when I graduated from high school. and I got to give the graduation speech, the baccalaureate, at Stanford Church, which is the same church where my parents got married and where I was baptized. And now here I was giving my graduation speech. And I quoted a quote from Jonathan Livingston Seagull in there. And he is a wonderful example of how we find freedom. Because Jonathan, he was always enamored with flight. And he saw that all the other seagulls, all they cared about was, you know, picking up garbage off the beach and eating and walking around and squawking or whatever. They spent their life pretty much on the ground. That's where they were. But he wanted to be in the air. He wanted to fly. He wanted to push the boundaries. He wanted to fly faster and better and higher and all that. And he pushed himself and pushed himself. And the other seagulls thought he was crazy. Don't you feel like that sometimes? You want this spiritual growth in everything, and some people look at you like, why? You know? Let's just eat the cake, you know? You're like, no, there's more to life than that. I know there's more to life than that. So he says, this is the quote, how much more there is to living. Instead of our drab slogging back and forth to the fishing boats, there's a reason to life. We can lift ourselves out of ignorance. We can find ourselves as creatures of excellence and intelligence and skill. We can be free. We can learn to fly. And by fly, he means not just like, psh, go fly, like we can walk, right? But how about can we live? You know, we have our lives, but can we really live? What does that really mean to us? So Jonathan, one of the first things he did is he got a teacher, which is what we do too here, right? We have teachers in this church, wonderful teachers. We have teachers in the scriptures that we read and the books that we read, give us great advice. So Jonathan's first teacher, Sullivan, said, do you have any idea how many lives we must have gone through before we even got the first idea that there's more to life than eating or fighting or power in the flock? So we're in a very special situation here, that we're here in this room now with each other in this community, that we have that idea. There's more to life. We had choices of where we spend our Sunday, right? We're here pursuing our spiritual growth. Hallelujah. Great job. You know, this is good. We found a good flock to be with. This is great. Then he had another teacher who said, to fly as fast as thought, to anywhere that is, you must begin by knowing that you have already arrived. Doesn't Ernest Holmes say the same thing? As if it's already been done. Because it has, in spirit. You wouldn't want something if it wasn't possible for you. You wouldn't even have that thought if it weren't already a possibility. And then that same teacher said, forget about faith. You didn't need faith to fly. You needed to understand flying. This is just the same. Try again. So faith is great. Faith is good. It shows you believe and that you know there's something higher. But you need more than faith. You need knowledge. You need understanding. And this is what Vedanta says too. Jnana yoga, knowledge. This is why we read the books and take the classes. Yes, we have the belief. But when we have the understanding, then the intelligence that's driving the chariot knows how to hold the reins, how to control the horses, right? It's all a part of practice. The more we do it, the better we get at it. So are we going to just believe it, or are we going to know it? That's what knowledge gives us. Knowledge helps give us this freedom. So after Jonathan learned this and he learned how to fly really well, then Jonathan became a teacher himself. And he taught the gulls that it's right for a gull to fly. That freedom is the very nature of your being. That's the same for us. Freedom is the very nature of our being. And his students will say, well, but wait, what about the law of the flock? The flock is all saying the nature of our being is eating and fighting and power and all that. Jonathan says, the only true law is that which leads to freedom. There's no other. So when we're doing that discernment, I didn't even get to the second part yet, so I got to pick that back up. This is how I get so off on a tangent. But so when we're doing that discernment and we're looking at what is real and what is not real, and we're looking online, we need to think, is this helping to purify my mind or is this helping to pollute my mind? Think twice, you know. What are we taking in? What are we affirming in ourselves? That we're free or that we're bound? And the second part of the equation, which is renunciation. Renunciation means giving up everything that is unreal. Okay, this doesn't mean you have to stop coloring your hair. This doesn't mean you have to sell your car or, you know, give your money away to charity. It does not mean that. It means to give up what binds you, to give up the desires, to give up the aversions, to know what is real and to choose what is real over what is not real. Okay? Does that make sense? To always choose the higher, the best. Choose what purifies the mind, not what pollutes the mind. That's what renunciation is. So I'm trying. I'm doing my best. I'm not going to stop coloring my hair, but I am going to always choose the real over the unreal as much as I can. So then the next step in the evolution of Jonathan Livingston Seagull is that Jonathan found freedom himself and like disappeared into light. And then it was up to his students to take over. And Jonathan told his student, Fletcher, who was going to take over, don't believe what your eyes are telling you. All they show is limitation. See, with our senses, all we perceive is limitation. Look with your understanding. Find out what you already know, and you'll see the way to fly. Then Jonathan vanished. Now, interestingly enough, that is where the book originally ended, back in the 70s. But in 2013, Richard Bach, who wrote the book, and I just found out this recently, but Richard Bach, I think, is amazing that he wrote this book. And he was an aviator, so that's why he was so enamored with flight and everything. He's getting older now, and he and his wife are cleaning out all their stuff. And they found this lost chapter, the fourth part of the book. And he's like, I don't even remember writing this. And then he read it, and he goes, yes. Now I remember writing this. I wrote this, and I thought, you know what? The world isn't ready for this. But now it is. Now it is. So when you get the book, and I hope you do get the book because it's really good, get this new, the complete edition that came out. Includes the Rediscovered Part 4. And Part 4 says that after Jonathan was gone and Fletcher was teaching, there was this golden age for the seagulls. And they were really into flight and flying. And everybody was, you know, it was like prosperous. And they all got it. And they all got along. And that was great. But then at a certain point, people started questioning. And then they started getting competitive. And then when they started talking about Jonathan, they weren't talking about what he said about flight. They were like, well, but what did he look like? What color were his eyes? Well, could he really do that? How do you know? The further the generations got apart where his students were dying off and everything, the further away they got from the truth that Jonathan told. They were going around carrying stones, and it was like, who can carry the heaviest stone? And they just got so off track. with Siegel wife, with they didn't understand anymore. But all it took was one more Siegel, one Siegel like Jonathan, looking for answers, thinking there's got to be something more. Why am I carrying around this heavy stone? Why am I walking on the earth? I was born to fly. I'm a bird. I've got wings. So he started questioning, and he started flying and trying and practicing. And a light brushed by him. And he started to fly to catch up to the light. And he flew, and he saw the bird, and he goes, "How did you do that? How did you do that? Who are you?" And he goes, "Hey, my name's John. I'll be your teacher." Jonathan came back. And this is what happens in spiritual traditions. This is what it says in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna said to Arjuna, "From teacher to teacher over the years, this knowledge is passed down in a chain. And when the knowledge is forgotten, I then return to teach again. I come to deliver the holy, to reestablish what is right. Those who understand my role here are guided to the light." So in the Vedanta change, it was Vishnu, Ram, Krishna, Jesus, Buddha, Ramakrishna. Ramakrishna was just here on this earth at the turn of the century, which is not too long ago when you look at the history of the world. But even since then, look at all the amazing spiritual teachers we've had, including Ernest Holmes, right? Science of Mind, A Course in Miracles, Richard Bach, all these great spiritual teachers. So I think what this is telling us is that there is no savior for us to wait for. It's right here, right now. And if you want freedom, four words. My class knows these four words, right? Know who you are. And that's it. That's all we need to know. And so it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.